Hey, ding-dongs, I'm Jamie.
I'm Richard.
And this is Explain It to Jamie, the political comedy podcast in which I, Jamie, a politically innocent but curious fella from Toronto, Canada, have the complicated political happenings of the world explained to me by my fabulous, politically savvy friend, Richard Lamb.
Hello.
Rico, how's it going, baby?
It's going good, man. It's going good. You know, can't complain, except about how terrible the world is, which is sort of why I started this entire podcast in the first place, to give me a way to vent all of the terrible feelings building up inside me, reading the nightmarish internet day in and day out.
Yeah, well, you know, it was kind of sad watching you scream into the void for so long. You know, it's kind of nice that you have literally tens of people to scream at online.
Especially since the void is our own nickname for your bedroom.
Yeah.
I would spend several hours a day just opening your door and screaming at the top of my lungs until my eyes bled pure sadness.
Yeah, I wish you didn't start at 5 a.m.
Well, what can I say? The rooster crows, the Twitter feed refreshes, and there's a new thronging parade of horrors to behold and consider.
Yeah, I heard you yesterday. we are back again. For those of you that are new to this podcast, I sort of explained it. Richard's a smart political guy. I don't know much about politics at all. The world moves fast, and I need it explained to me, man.
Yeah.
This week, I want to know about pipelines.
About pipelines. And specifically, we're talking about
the one that's going on right now.
Yeah,
with all the drama in BC.
Yeah, so this is the Unistoten, the camp.
Unistoten.
That's the name of the camp where the people are. The First Nation where this is taking place is called the Wet'suwet'en First Nation.
Wet'suwet'en.
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 Yeah.
Sure.
Sure. Let's go with that.
Great, great.
It's tricky. It's a word in a different language that neither of us are used to speaking. So the Wet'suwet'en is the First Nation. The Unistoten are one of the five clans of that First Nation. They're one of the five smaller groups.
Mm-hmm.
It's in Black Panther, how there's Wakanda, but then there's all the different
tribes.
Yeah, different tribes in Wakanda. It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
So the Unistoten are the group that's kind of their territory sits on an area that a pipeline is going to be built through. So they built this protest camp on the site where the pipeline was going to go and are blockading construction of the pipeline.
Right.
And the RCMP showed up like a big bunch of dicks with very military equipment and have started to try to kick them out of there.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, would you say it serves them right for setting up camp on all that oil?
I guarantee you there's somebody who's non-ironically thought that.
Just what?
You just made all of the lobes of my brain soften. They just feel softer now than they did a minute ago.
Amen.
In not a good way.
I'm a relaxing guy.
You're very relaxing guy, Jamie. Why don't we relax ourselves into this theme song and get started?
You got it, baby. Heck yeah. So, pipelines.
Yeah.
This is something I have been curious about. I've been interested to talk about it on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I just came back from Alberta for the holiday, and I spent some time in Calgary and Edmonton because my girlfriend's family lives down in Calgary, and things are not great.
What's
there.
The temperature?
The temperature is generally angry.
Yeah.
Quite angry. There's a lot of Justin Trudeau hatred going on out there right now.
Right.
A lot of call for pipelines.
That's really funny because it's the guy can't win. You think they'd love Justin Trudeau because he just sicked the fucking RCMP on all these people who are peacefully trying to protest a pipeline.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not. Well, it's just this is one of those funny things about pipeline politics because Justin Trudeau has only done pro-pipeline things. He's done no anti-pipeline things at all. He paid an insane amount of money for the Trans Mountain pipeline. He bought this old pipeline that was in existence that was needed a buyer.
Mm-hmm.
The government bought it for so much money and he's approved all these new pipelines to get built.
Right.
Right. So I don't know. I think that the people's objection to him in Calgary is they're dumb.
Sure.
Like, they're not paying attention to what he's actually doing.
He's pro-pipeline. Yeah. I will say I got into, not an argument, but, like, a conversation with somebody who was sort of saying, it was, what was the point they were making? Was that, that now the East is now getting, feeding off of the resources and the money generated by Alberta.
That was only true decades ago. Alberta now receives more equalization payments than it puts out.
Wow.
Yeah, but people still think that's true, right? It's just ignorance. Like, it's just myths about Alberta that have existed since the first Trudeau was.
Yeah, the point I made that seemed to end the argument was not, it wasn't an argument, but end the conversation was like, yeah, but if you're making money, like, I feel like when I was in elementary school and my teacher explained to me what non-renewable resources were, yeah. I was like, oh, okay, so you better save the money that you make from those.
Yeah.
Because those are going to run out.
Yes.
You know, so like...
Which they had a chance to do in Alberta and they just didn't.
Sure.
Unlike Alaska, which, you know, we've talked about this before on previous episodes of the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, also, I've been to Fort McMurray, which is where the closest major urban center to the oil patches in Alberta. Mm-hmm. And at the fucking No Frills there, they have like Atlantic Ocean live lobsters.
Oh, yeah.
And those are... Where do you think those come from, guys? You get to have lobsters. The rest of Canada gets to have oil and you're complaining. Right. Why are you so upset about this?
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, okay, so pipelines.
Pipelines, baby.
Pipelines are interesting because
tubes.
They're like tubes. And yet they're also like straws. Wait, are straws like tubes? Dun, dun, dun. No, so pipelines, I once had pipelines explained to me in this very interesting way by my friend Matthew Berry, who I went to politics school with, and who's like my a friend of mine who's like a true old school conservative, where he really is not very socially conservative at all, but he's like a fiscal conservative.
Sure.
Only. And in a way that's kind of a very dying breed now in the post-Trump world. Mm. But he's a person of integrity and a person he's very smart and I really like talking to him about things. And so back when I was still a liberal and I wasn't 100% sure where I stood exactly on pipelines, he explained them to me in a very good way, which was that if you want Canada to have an oil industry, if you think Canada should have an oil industry, then you need to have pipelines.
Yeah.
It makes no sense to want to develop or use or harness Canada's oil industry and not have pipelines because Canada needs to send the oil places once it pulls it out of the ground. And if it doesn't have pipelines, all of the other options are way worse than pipelines.
Like trains and trucks. And
exactly.
Like
trains is like the number one way that they would send it around. And trains are so much worse than pipelines because trains derail a lot more. Yeah. They're like worse for the environment. They're way more inefficient. They consume a lot of energy to use. If you're going to export the oil, the pipeline is by far the best way to invest in it.
Right.
Right. And I thought that was really useful because then I was like, oh, cool, 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 cool. I guess I'm against the oil industry.
you know what I mean?
Like, and that was kind of one of those major things for me. And I had to think about it for a long time. So I was like, is there a way to square this circle? And this was in like 2011 that we were having this conversation. Right. In 2019, I do not understand how anyone could be really enthusiastic about investing another $6 billion into our oil industry.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
We have some pipelines, don't we?
We have quite a few pipelines. There's what? Already some
And they don't
pipelines.
Do the job anymore?
Well, it's just about sending the new different kinds of oil to the new ports. Like there's a pipeline that runs, an oil pipeline that runs to Vancouver, mm-hmm. right? But they want to create a much more direct one that runs to Kitimat, which is like a northern BC port, right? And there's all kinds of reasons that people don't want them to do that, especially, and the number, like one of the main ones is the threat of spills, which happen all the time. And if there's a spill into a waterway, it wreaks a lot of devastation and it crosses thousands of waterways. Mm-hmm. And the First Nations who are affected by this really don't want that to happen. They also don't want oil tankers in those, like the kind of straits around Kitimat, because the waters are super, super dangerous. I've heard them called the fourth most dangerous waters in the world for boats. And these boats are going to be enormous super tankers navigating these dangerous waters. Like, but an oil spill is probably not going to happen. No, right. It's absolutely going to happen. It's more of a question of when than if.
Right,
you know?
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
What do you probably don't know, but like what's the percentage of Canada's economy that depends on oil?
Ooh, good question. Let's look it up. Hey, everybody. So right after I looked up what percentage of the GDP of Canada oil is, I closed the laptop and stopped recording. So we lost probably 4 or 5 minutes of recording. In it, we created a roadmap for Canada, a detailed economic roadmap for Canada to transition from the oil economy to a green economy completely without any additional taxpayer spending in the next 2 years. But unfortunately, it's lost. And then Jamie and I saw a cute dog video and forgot it.
Yeah, so whoopsie.
It's lost the mist of time now.
Yeah.
Anyway,
like the Great Library of Athens.
Alexandria? Wait, was there also one in Athens that's even more forgotten?
I think there was a library in Athens that was forgotten, wasn't
it? Was it great?
It was fine.
I guess it's forgotten. That's one of the things we forgot.
Yeah. So the energy sector makes up 11% of Canada's GDP is what we were saying.
Yes.
So what would happen? I've seen these videos of Justin Trudeau where he's like debating protesters and he'll always like single out one who seems totally ill-equipped for the argument. And the video I've seen is him sort of saying, do you honestly believe that Canada can just go cold turkey off of oil? And I hear that and go, I don't know. You know, I don't support oil. I don't think it's a good idea.
Right.
But I understand that when you're playing with 10% of your budget, and if you just take that out, that's going to be a very easy target for the conservatives to go like.
That's just a super dishonest way to frame that whole issue, right? Nobody expects us to pull the plug and never do oil again.
Right.
It's like, we're just going to deal with 10% less money. Ha ha ha, I hate white people. Like, that's not what it is, right? It's like, when you're trying to get off coffee, you're supposed to, like, reduce by a quarter cup every day.
Right?
Like, obviously, it's going to involve a step-by-step transition. Obviously, it's going to involve some kind of what's called the just transition, like justice and justice, where people, the workers who are currently employed in the oil industry, don't get totally fucked by us transitioning away from oil. I mean, let's be clear. They will get fucked at some point by the oil just running out.
Right.
Like, that's going to happen. No one doesn't think that's going to happen. I think people are really... Yeah. Trying not to think about it.
And
too
actually,
much.
In a way, Alberta's kind of already gotten a big old taste of like what that would look like.
Multiple tastes.
You know what I mean?
In the last 5 years.
Yeah.
The boom and bust of the international oil prices have ruthlessly affected Alberta to the point where they now receive more money from the rest of Canada than they give back to it.
Which is
like another thing that, you know, again, Albertans really should get that memo.
Right.
But yeah, it's so no, it's going to be a transition. Of retraining people in the oil industry to install solar panels, retraining people in the oil industry to, you know, work on dams, work maybe in electric car factories, or create installing electric car charging stations. Like, this is work that's going to have to be done. You know, if you go around right now looking at parking lots, trying to see how many electric cars could get parked in those parking lots and charged, it's only like 2 or 3 sometimes in every park, in only new parking lots. Like, we're going to need 100 times that many.
They're saying that's one of the big problems that Tesla's running into right now.
Right.
That they're selling more cars than they have.
Right.
And they can't keep up with demand.
So,
which I mean is cool.
Yeah.
You know, like they can't keep up with the demand of how many people want electric cars, but the amount of electric cars they're producing don't have enough places to charge them, and the anticipated numbers of cars that they're selling over there. It's a monumental economic issue.
This is a good opportunity for me. I'm finally going to like dish out my big manifesto about China, which I've been not saving, but like just seeing happening in real life over the last several years, which is that China, there's a big news story recently where China has passed a law where car factories in China are not going to be allowed to not make electric cars starting next year.
Whoa.
So every car factory in China will have to have the capacity to begin making electric cars within a year. That's a law that they just passed and a rule that they just passed.
Great.
Meanwhile, there's also been tons of news articles almost every year about every year China is reducing its dependency on oil in the double digits, you know, between 10 and 20% less oil every single year being consumed in China as they build huge dams, as they invest in solar, as they pivot to these things. Now, is China the world's most environment-loving country?
Historically, yes.
Yes, absolutely. if I think of China, I think, man, those people would, you know, sacrifice everything to save the environment.
Right.
Fuck no, they're not. What they can see, China is right now a superpower on the rise, and honestly and truly, it may already be too late to stop, like, perfectly frankly. Teach your kids Mandarin. Like, let me just tell you that right now. Like, if you if you're a person who doesn't have kids yet and is contemplating having them within the next 5 to 10 years, teach your kids Mandarin. They're gonna go far.
Right.
That's not a joke. I'm being real with you right now. Yeah. But they realize North America is dithering about switching to green energy. China is going to completely reduce its oil dependency, which will cripple. Yeah. Oil exporting countries like us, they're trying to build a pipeline to the Pacific Ocean. Where do you think they're trying to send the oil? They're trying to send it to markets like China.
Puerto Rico.
Yeah. That's right. The guy planning the pipeline, there was his map. He didn't unfold it all the way.
Right.
Yeah, he really thought that Kitimat and Puerto Rico were actually, like, really close.
These guys love oil out in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, they're hungry for it. Yeah. They don't have any stuff left there anymore. Power, but yeah. Anyway, China is reducing its oil dependency a lot, and that's economic warfare.
Yeah.
They're going to both make our thing that we've bet 10% of our economy on worth very, very little, less every single year, as you reduce the market for it, right?
Right.
They're going to make it worth less all the time. And then they're also going to outpace us for producing all the green shit.
Right.
So we're going to be buying all of our solar panels and our electric cars from them.
Right.
And they're going to literally fucking own us.
Right.
Like, so, and it just blows my mind. It honestly, Jamie, it blows my mind. All these, like, racist people in Canada who are scared of Muslims taking over when China is literally making big dick power plays to own the 21st and 22nd centuries of global history.
Right.
Like, literally, they're setting themselves up to become the next superpower in the next 20 to 50 years by beating the rest of the world to, like, the green energy revolution.
Right. Now, you say this as though it's a massive foreboding thing, but it sounds like, I mean, for me, I'm not I'm not in the green energy sector. It seems like a positive thing if they are pushing that forward, and they have that massive population.
The thing is, China's is an authoritarian dictatorship. So, like, when they buy our country, we have to live under their rules. You know what I mean?
Right,
I don't want to live under Chinese rules. I think it's scary.
Right.
I don't want to do that. You know, I like having, like, the theoretical freedoms I have in Canada. I mean, I don't like it when they're pissed on and not followed through on, and I want to defend them.
Yeah.
But I would much rather live in Canada than China. I'm a Canadian. I believe in this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I
think that when they buy our country because our oil's worth nothing, and we finish the pipeline, and then, like, no one wants to buy our dumbass oil anymore because it's literally a 19th century stupid product, and now it's the 21st century.
Right. But think of all the cool water slides we'll have then, all across the country.
Well, the Chinese people who live here will have the water slides.
Yeah, you're
will
right.
be their butlers.
Yeah, you're
like
right.
I'm not fully kidding.
Right. Nope. Yep. I mean, yeah.
It's gonna be like the Roman Empire. Like, picture that. You know, it'll be like we're gonna be a colony.
Mm-hmm.
That's the scenario I want you to try to imagine. It's like all the signs are in Chinese, all the government is in Chinese. You have to do Chinese to like interact with the world, and all the rich Chinese people own all the shit, and all the white people are like second class citizens.
Right.
You know, I actually think that that's like maybe like becoming more of a possibility all the time.
Wow. I mean, we got to do another China episode.
We've got more coming
so far.
Anyway, this is my conspiracy theory about China. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's just literally what's happening. And you can follow that line.
Sure.
It makes perfect sense, and I'm sad that more people aren't talking about it, frankly.
Yeah.
So, all of this to say, pipelines are a dumb thing to really, really be betting on right now, I think. And it's every year that goes by without us beginning to get really serious about this transition to green energy is a year we don't have. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because we haven't even talked about the looming climate crisis. Obviously, we've talked about it on the show, but that's a huge part of this as well. It has to happen in a timely fashion. We can't just, hope it happens sometime.
Right. Can't you just be happy that we legalized marijuana, Richard?
I mean, I haven't had a toke yet today, so my brain flies be buzzing. Once I get that sweet, sweet kush flowing through my bloodstream, all I'm going to want to do is watch Rick and Morty and mow some za like a proud Canadian would.
Wow, cool, dude.
Anyway, let's flip it all the way back to the Unistoten camp. There's something, because there's one last really interesting aspect of this, which is that... basically, we've barely talked about it at all, funny enough. So they're trying to build this pipeline through their territory. They object to it because it's going to put their waterways in crisis, and water is very important to them. And I'm sure they also feel like they're getting a shitty deal. They were offered something like $20 million over like 10 years right. or something for a pipeline that's going to make like $17 or $18 billion in profit for its parent company. You know, it's like they were not offered a crazy deal. They were offered what they thought was kind of a shitty deal.
Yeah.
It was like, it was like
First Nations people being offered a shitty deal.
I know, right? Yeah. It's like never happened in Canadian history ever before. But that's what's interesting about this case is that this First Nation, the Wet'suwet'en First Nation, won this landmark Supreme Court case in 1997 where they were like, hey, Canada never actually like conquered us. They never signed a treaty here. They say that this is part of British Columbia, but there's actually like no one ever did that.
Right.
So this land is totally unceded. There's no treaty. It's not part of the treaty lands. It's not, it was never conquered in war.
Right.
We still have it. Right. We never gave up the right to make the laws here.
Right.
That never happened. And they won that case in the Supreme Court of Canada.
Uh-huh.
So because of that, this is part of what's complicated about it. And if you're ever reading news articles about this, there's like two systems of government in the Wet'suwet'en First Nation. There's like the Band Council, which is like the same government that every Native reservation has in Canada. And that like comes from the Indian Act, which if you're not familiar with Canadian politics, it is literally called the Indian Act still to this day. Wow. I love living in the future. So in the Indian Act, it forces all of the reservations to use the same form of government. And those are the people who like the Band Council is elected and like in a democratic election, and they interact with the federal government. But basically they're often perceived as having to rubber stamp everything the government wants in order to get federal funding.
Mm-hmm.
They can't really disagree with them.
Right, right, right.
Then they have what's called the hereditary chiefs, which is like the old system of government that's persisted all this time. So even though there was a band council, that's the imposed colonial government.
Mm.
There is like their actual system of government that they've had for thousands and thousands of years. And those are the people who the band council was like, we should do the pipeline. The government wants us to.
Right.
And then the hereditary chiefs were like, no, fuck no.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where this standoff came about. That's why this camp was erected to symbolically stand on the land the pipeline was going to move through. It was like their blockade of the pipeline, but instead of just building a blockade, they built like a fully self-sufficient solar-powered camp as kind of like a fuck you, I think.
Right, right, right.
Honestly, they were like, we're going to not poison our waterways, and we've made this like solar-powered, energy-efficient camp.
Right, right, right. Yeah. And the RCMP's knocking all that shit.
Yeah, down. So what happened was they set up like a checkpoint on a bridge that the Coastal Gas Link, the company building the pipeline, they needed to get across the bridge to start doing the work. They set up a checkpoint and weren't letting people through. So the RCMP like fully militarized themselves, like, you know, armored vehicles, full tactical gear, and like kind of overran the checkpoint. And they also did all this fucked up shit. Like they didn't let journalists come. They forced all the journalists away. They disrupted their communications. I mean, it's not clear if the RCMP disrupted their communications, heavy air quotes.
Right.
Everyone's Wi-Fi happened to fail at the moment the raid happened, you know, right. Like, but what a crazy coincidence, you
sure.
know? Wow, who could have predicted?
Yeah, phew.
They arrested 14 people. They've been released now on condition that they won't disturb the peace. But basically, this is like a group of people who have won a court case to say that this is their land and they have the right to make decisions on it.
Right.
And, you know, Justin Trudeau is talking about reconciliation being important. Well, this is him pissing on this First Nation.
Right.
And it's a violation of UNDRIP, the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which says you're not allowed to remove Indigenous people from their own land. So it's a violation of that. And it's just like morally disgusting, you mm-hmm. know, you like to claim that you're for reconciliation and then to just literally, you can say you're for anything until the moment where you have to not get what you want.
Right.
And then it's like, do you stand with the principal and accept it or do you not? And in this case, they're just flexing their muscles and trying to bully their way through it.
Right.
It's like that thing in Hamilton, the musical. I know, Hamilton the musical, not my favorite. Uh-huh. But where it's like, it was a big deal in America when the government changes. You know what I mean? That's what they say is the test of a democracy, is if the government can change from the first party to the opposition party and then back to the first party in an election. And you know what I mean? Where it's like,
yeah.
So it's like, if you create a new country that's a democracy, quote unquote,
yeah,
it's only really proven to be a democracy if the party that started the country loses an election to the opposition and then the opposition gets to run it. And then they lose again, and it goes back to the original people,
right.
And they get to run
it
again peacefully.
Sustainable in a way.
Exactly. It shows that it's actually a democracy, that people are committed to handing over power if the election says that you have to hand over power.
Right.
So it's kind of like that, where it's like, oh, you're committed to reconciliation. You're committed to recognizing the rights of indigenous people, except the first major time these people are like, no, we actually don't consent to this pipeline being built. You're like, well, fuck you, you motherfucker. You know, like suddenly
you give
yourself away totally, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like somebody coming in and being like, you go come in, you know, make yourself at home. Like, do you want a drink? Do you want a soda? And you're like, you know what? Actually, I would like a soda. And they're like, oh, no, I didn't want you to. You know, it's like they're just bullshitters.
Right. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So what do you think is going to happen to old Justin Trudeau? When's the next election? It's got to be coming
up. It's coming up next year, 2020.
Yeah. And so, but he did, there's no one really on the conservative side.
Well, Andrew Scheer, well, Maxime Bernier, who's everyone's loud, shitty, racist Quebecois uncle, has broken off from the conservatives to form his own stupid party. And they've gone full, like, Pizzagate, internet conspiracy, right-wing rebel media craziness.
Right.
Basically, the conservatives and this... And they're driving the Conservative Party more to the right, too. So I think the Conservative Party is looking a bit of a shambles at the moment. There is a lot of anti-Trudeau sentiment, but the NDP is looking pretty weak right now, too. Like, Jagmeet has really not carved out a strong identity for them in the current era. So I don't think they're a serious contender right now for Justin.
And you gotta wonder about, like, Rachel Notley out in Alberta, like, if she'll last another election.
I'm worried about Rachel Notley.
It doesn't seem like she would last another election.
I don't see how she could pull it off.
Yeah.
It's sad, but true. Jason Kenney's one of the worst people I can conceive of in Canadian politics, who's the leader of the, like, Albertan United Conservative Party.
Uh-huh.
And he's a nightmare. He's like a devastatingly monstrous social conservative with virtually no scruples or morals of any kind, who will lie inveterately about his legislative record and on the record hatred of gay people, his basically just like short-sighted economic bullshit. Like, he's going to continue to do whatever the oil industry wants and to not manage that wealth in a way that benefits Albertans whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to hurt lots of people long run, obviously, as Alberta continues to like burn every year in fires and et cetera, et cetera. That's only going to get worse. It's not going to be forward thinking leadership. The same as we have in Ontario, frankly, like,
right.
And that's what makes this all so sad. It's like, we're in a time where we need a long-term strategy for people to get serious. And we actually have, like, literally the opposite of that. We have, the shortest term.
We have a long-term strategy to make a long-term strategy.
Not even. We have, like, people are running the ball in the opposite direction. They're running straight towards our own end zone right now. You know what I mean? They're it's okay, guys. It's like they all bet. It's like they're the quarterback and they bet against us, like with a bookie. Like, they bet on our team losing and they're running the end zone. And they're all going to make $1 million and we're all fucked.
Right,
that's exactly
what
it's like.
Right. Oh, God.
Yeah. Anyway, welcome to 2019.
Yeah.
Second week, here we are. It's just as terrible as the first week.
Oh, man. Pipelines, baby. That's so crazy. It's so crazy. Well, there's lots of protests happening. People are making their voices heard.
Yes. I mean, it's galvanized a lot of people.
I didn't know that thing about the unclaimed land. Like, it was,
yeah,
like,
it's one of the biggest things about it. In a way, I think this will be the test case for the modern era of reconciliation, like the post-Truth and Reconciliation Report era. This is the first serious flashpoint. There's been many, many flashpoints. It's always, you know, very few First Nations have a totally smooth relationship with the federal government, if any of them.
Right.
But this is a big one. Because their claim is so strong and so proven already, they're a very organized band or nation. Like, they're, if you go to their website, it's like beautiful. They're very used to talking about what they do and why they do it. They have good videos. Like they have, like it's very, they're ready for a fight, and they're not gonna, it doesn't seem like a violent fight. It seems like a fight for public opinion, a fight in the courts. They're really ready for a legal battle because they have a lot of precedent on their side.
Right.
I think they're willing to dig in and play a very long, drawn out game here.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
It's good. And I mean, it's good. There's still some fighting people.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a flashpoint, I think, and a rallying point for Indigenous people across Canada to, to determine their own relationship with the federal government and with Canada in a new way.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, there you guys go. If you are galvanized by this podcast, I'm sure that it would be, it's a very short Google search away from like all sorts of petitions that you can sign.
And one of the main things you can do is donate to their legal defense fund, which I will put a link to in the description. So take a look in the description of this if you're interested in that. Chip them a few dollars. I'm sure it would really, they appreciate it. And it's a concrete way that you will help them.
Yeah, yeah. And if you feel like helping us, if you like this podcast, share it around. Share it around. Give us a rating on iTunes or on SoundCloud. Every little effort that you make helps us a long way. We want to, I want to take this second to thank our Patreon subscribers. You are growing every week, which we are so grateful for and kind of blown away by.
And
actually,
thanks to you, our Patreon subscribers, we've hit like this great milestone where our podcast is now breaking even.
Yeah.
And we now pay for the hosting of the podcast and the hosting of our website with our patrons every month.
That's
actually a big deal for us because we've been hosting it off our own dime for all these years.
Yeah. Yeah. So the next phase for us, for those of you keeping track, is to move.
Build a pipeline. We're building a podcast pipeline straight through unceded Indigenous territory.
Yeah, so we do need a few more patrons to start donating.
It's a $10 billion pipeline.
Yeah. Guys, yeah, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate you. If you have any questions or you want to suggest a topic, get at us. We're on social media. We got email.
Hit us up.
We're not hard to find.
You've got this far. Into the internet. I believe in you. You can do it.
Yeah. Until next time, I'm Jamie.
I'm Richard.
This has been Explain It to Jamie.